It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Researchers and the public have a new tool to track sexual assaults in Wisconsin. The Department of Justice has launched the Wisconsin Uniform Crime Reporting Data Dashboard Center, which tracks sexual assaults across the state. With us to talk about these dashboards and the prevalence of sexual assault in Wisconsin is Attorney General Brad Schimmel. Attorney General, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
So what is the goal of releasing this specific incident-by-incident level data?
Well, I want to say one thing first, and it's important for all of us to remember that behind all these numbers are survivors of sexual assault, people that had the courage to come forward, report what happened to them, and seek justice. And, you know, that's one of the things that's changed over the years is that we are seeing more victims willing to come forward, willing to participate in the system, and that's in large part because the system has become more welcoming to them and become more effective at helping them. But the value to this data is, as local communities, as district attorneys and county criminal justice collaborating councils, as they work to develop evidence-based solutions to this problem, you know, how do you respond? What resources do you put in place? What services do you need to have available to survivors? What kind of bail programs work? You name it. It's important to have the data so you can make good decisions because society is finally taking a more critical look at sexual assault. Therefore, they need to have reliable data to determine the resources and services they need to put in place.
A more critical look in terms of how is that changing?
Well, we're recognizing that those who commit sexual assault often commit more than one sexual assault. We're recognizing that the survivors of sexual assault have needs that we're going to have to address that don't always come out immediately, but that this can cause long-term impacts on them. So we're looking more carefully and more comprehensively at that big picture, at what we need to do to hold that offender accountable, to make sure that offender can't be dangerous to the community anymore, and to make sure that that victim gets on the track of healing.
So this is a sexual offense database. Is there a separate sexual offender database?
It's all in this. Okay. So we have incident-level data that includes things, details such as whether weapons were involved, the location of the offense. We have victim and defendant demographics. We have information about the nature of their relationships. So knowing more about the relationships between offenders and their victims can help with prevention efforts, can help us identify places where we need better structures in place to make sure that certain types of individuals don't get access to victims. The data can be used in so many ways, and I saw this in my 25 years in the DA's office that one of the big struggles we had with our Waukesha County sexual assault response team and our Criminal Justice Collaborating Council, both of which I served on, was just getting the data we needed to understand what steps we needed to take. So that's why we felt this was important at DOJ to start getting reliable data to the public. And oftentimes those are county level and local level leaders who are trying to resolve issues.
I guess I also want to know, I've also often heard of the sex offenders registry, where if you are convicted of a sex crime, right, you have to put your name in. This is not part of that, right? That's a separate thing.
Right. That's a separate issue, and that identifies defendants specifically by who they are. This information is it just in the form of demographics? So you're not going to find the identity of a victim. You're not going to find specific offender data in here except the demographic.
Okay. So as you're rolling this out, what are you hearing from local police and local organizations about how they're going to use this?
Well, we know they've been starved for data. I co-chair the state's Criminal Justice Collaborating Council, and we hear from the county level constantly how they need more information to be able to determine what evidence-based programs they need to put in place in their communities, and they need to be able to justify the existence of those. They need to be able to demonstrate what they're doing makes sense and that it's working, because you have to make an investment in prevention measures, in measures that that bring about healing, it costs some money. You have to be able to demonstrate that that money pays off. So that's why the data can be very helpful to them. That's what we're hearing from. That's what we're hearing from the county levels.
So this data is taken from all sexual assaults reported to the DOJ, or assaults right. that went to trial, or assaults that resulted in a conviction.
Law enforcement is responsible for reporting to us all arrest data relating to sexual assaults, and so that's the data that we're crunching together to produce this dashboard.
Okay, so all data that is reported, not necessarily convictions or anything like that.
Right.
Okay.
It's far more than just convictions, yeah.
And how often is this going to be updated?
Quarterly.
Oh, quarterly. Who's doing the updating? Who's compiling these numbers?
We have our office, our Bureau of Justice Information and Assistance at DOJ. We have several PhD level researchers who work on these kind of projects. Their primary function is to help the criminal justice system identify how it can work more effectively with limited resources. We all know that there's not an unlimited number of resources available, so we're always working to help our criminal justice partners use the resources they have most effectively.
So this is, you're focusing more on sexual assaults and learning more about how the effects of sexual assaults resonate throughout the community. There has been criticism of your department and various law enforcement agencies around the state about the handling of rape kits. Thousands of rape kits went untested for years. This has been a problem in other states also. It's been a problem across the country. How many are left in Wisconsin, and what's the timeline for getting them tested?
Yeah, we are well under 500 kits left to be completed at the labs. So stay tuned. There's going to be some very good news in not too long down the future. We will resolve a problem that has accumulated for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. We'll resolve it in less than three. And you're absolutely right, Kerry. This is a nationwide problem. Nationwide, tremendous mistakes were made. Victims were put through the sometimes embarrassing and humiliating process of a sexual assault kit being collected from their body. And then the kits were warehoused. Now, in Wisconsin, we're not going to see the kind of numbers that many other states and cities saw. Like, for instance, I was reading the other day that the city of Memphis itself has over 6,000 kits that have to be tested. Wisconsin, the whole state, we have just under 4,200 kits that are being tested. Other cities, Detroit, over 10,000 kits. We saw a huge problem nationwide. Wisconsin wasn't as bad. We weren't wholesale just putting these on shelves, mm-hmm. but there were mistakes made, and that's what we're working to address. I spent the largest part of my career in the Waukesha DA's office in the Sensitive Crimes Unit. I knew the value of getting these kits tested. In fact, I used it. I used the kits, including in one case, to catch a serial rapist that had committed sexual offenses in multiple states. I knew the value of this. That's why when I came to DOJ, I promised we were going to take this on. There's no statute that mandates this. This was voluntary that at DOJ we took on what was really a local problem, but we took it on at the state level to make sure this gets resolved, because it can. We owe victims of sexual violence better, and that's what we're working to do, and we'll get this problem resolved. And we're very proud that every law enforcement agency in Wisconsin, over 550 of them, every one of them voluntarily cooperated with this process. There was no law, there was no mandate that made them do this, but we reached out, we convinced them of the importance of this, and they got engaged. So
Attorney General Brad Schimel has launched his office. The DOJ has launched a new dashboard to track sexual assaults in the state. Attorney General, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Kerry.
It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Kerry Kaufman. We're going to explore the true cost of knee replacement, one of the most common surgeries outside of childbirth. But first, Wisconsin Public Radio is going beyond the ballot this year, asking people around the state what issues are important to them this election season. Healthcare has come up a lot. Today, the State Insurance Board is set to decide if certain services will be provided for transgender employees. As Patty Murray reports, people are paying attention to how policymakers treat the issue this election season. We don't seem to have that here. For more information on how to get involved or share your year in election story, you can visit Beyond the Ballot. Visit WPR.org/ballot. We're going to talk about a hospital in La Crosse that is getting better outcomes from its knee surgery replacement. We got it? Do we have the thing? Okay, we're going to play it right now.
It's late July's Pride Fest in Green Bay, where Alexandra Batts talks about her frustration navigating a private employer's health insurance program.
Speaking as a Black trans woman, it's insanely difficult. I'm happy I have insurance, but it's not the right insurance. And the more I keep trying to find out more answers, the more confusing it gets.
Batts recently moved from Racine to Menasha and says she feels bad that she doesn't know who her local officials are. She would like to ask them about health coverage for trans people.
What would you do for people who are still trying to figure out health care, especially with the LGBT community? And why not? What would you do to make our state overall number one throughout the entire nation? Like I said, I remember a time when Wisconsin was like number one, like we beat out all the other states. Why are we like number 50?
Batts isn't alone. Jay Botsford of the Wisconsin Transgender Health Coalition says both public and private employees have to navigate a complicated system.
If you're a state employee or an employee of one of the municipalities that's on a state municipal plan, you have no coverage for anything related to transition for your health care. And then for private individual and group plans, it really depends on the employer or the individual plan that's offered on the exchange.
In 2016, the State Group Insurance Board approved coverage of services related to what it calls gender reassignment or sexual transformation. But less than a year later, the board reversed that decision. This affected state employees like Sebastian Greenholtz, who's a trans man.
The routine blood test to test the level of testosterone and estrogen in my blood went from costing me nothing to costing me upwards of $500.
This week, the State Group Insurance Board will meet to consider reinstating that coverage. The Wisconsin Transgender Health Coalition is asking the state to cover surgery and hormones for sex reassignment. Sebastian Greenholtz believes elected politicians don't relate to what's going on in his life or that of, say, women in search of birth control.
It just drives me nuts that that person is empowered to make decisions about a health care issue that does not affect them at all.
The group insurance board has until the end of the year to make coverage decisions. Patty Murray, Wisconsin Public Radio.
For more information or to get involved and share your election year story with Beyond the Ballot, you can just go to WPR.org/ballot. Now, one of the solutions to the high healthcare costs is to have patients shop around. But getting a hospital to tell you the price of a procedure is nigh on impossible. A Wall Street Journal piece details how one hospital in La Crosse, actually, didn't even know the costs for one of its most common surgeries, which is knee replacement. It found out its costs were drastically lower than the price it was charging insurance companies and individuals, and it found that there was waste in the system. What do you think about the cost of healthcare versus the price of healthcare? Have you ever tried to find out how much a procedure is? And have you been in a position where you didn't have time to shop around? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org or tweet WPR Mornings. We're going to be talking to Melanie Evans now. She is a hospital reporter for The Wall Street Journal. And one of her latest pieces is, what does knee surgery cost? Few know, and that's a problem. Melanie, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So before we dive into the world of knee replacements, you write that hospitals are often ignorant about the actual costs of procedures. I have a hard time wrapping my head around that.
That's understandable. So hospitals historically have used kind of a broader, I guess, they've looked at costs at a higher level. Sort of not, they haven't looked at the cost of a specific procedure, but they may have tracked the costs of the department mm-hmm. that performs that procedure, or they may be looking at a group of specialists, and they might track the costs at that level. It's not that they don't have a kind of a higher level picture of mm-hmm. their costs. They've also used basically proxies, like approximations. They've kind of, as they try to calculate what these costs are and project how they may change or how they're, you know, so that they can kind of price in some of that growth in their expenses, mm-hmm. They've used kind of, they use approximations, as I said, or proxies. But when it comes to knowing the specific cost of a procedure, that is not work that a lot of hospitals have done. And so when I was working on this story, what I had hoped to do was find one of those few hospitals that had actually decided to get very, very specific about their costs, to understand them down to the minute, like mm-hmm. what it cost them to perform a procedure. And the hospital that I found was Gunderson Lutheran Medical Center in La Crosse, Wisconsin, which is part of the Gunderson Health System.
And they found that they were wildly overestimating their costs. And did they lower them when they figured that out?
Yeah. So they did this painstaking work following patients through the process, you know, from the clinic appointments, through like arriving at the hospital the day of the surgery, through, you know, pre-op, through the surgery itself, leaving the surgery, being transferred to the orthopedic unit, everything that happened through their discharge.
Mm-hmm.
And by discharge, I mean, you know, that's the point at which when you're a patient, you hopefully just head home. So many patients go to, maybe they might end up going to rehabilitation facility as well. But so they do all of this painstaking work. And prior to that, they actually did not even have an estimated cost. So they didn't know, it wasn't that they could say, well, here's what our costs were before, and here's what they are now. They just didn't have it. And so what they did is they found sort of like a what they called like an average range. You know, once they did all that work and analyzed all the information, they found that they had this average range. So the high end of that average range was about $10,550.
Mm-hmm.
For that was the cost to them to essentially produce a new knee. And then what they did is, as they kind of like, they looked at that whole process, that whole journey in the patient, and they said, what works and what doesn't? And by doing that, they picked apart the entire process and made some changes, some really interesting ones. And at the end of that, they managed to lower the cost. They lowered the cost and the time that a patient spends in the hospital. So ultimately, as of this year, the cost to produce a new knee at that hospital is now $8,700. And the hospital stay is, you know, for somebody who's getting a new knee, is on average, it's just almost a day shorter.
Okay, so how much were they charging insurance companies before they did this?
Yes, hospital charges. So hospitals have what's called a like a list price,
mm-hmm.
and that's the you can think of it like a sticker price.
Right.
And so they did have a sticker price at the beginning. You know, so if we go back to kind of the at the start,
right,
before they lowered their costs, they had a sticker price of about $50,000.
So they found out that they found out it was costing them $10,500 on the high end, but they were charging. They were asking. That was their first ask, was $50,000. That's a negotiation point, though, right?
Right. That is correct. So there are lots of ways that hospitals and insurance companies, they have lots of strategies for how they negotiate prices. But one of the strategies that they use is they will start with that asking price, and they will negotiate for something lower. And so, so this was their.
But it wasn't $10,500, and it probably wasn't even under $20,000.
Well, I did ask. That was not information that I got. I can say that, you know, like there is some research out there, not specifically about this hospital. You know, I don't want to, but there is some research out there that shows, you know, maybe the asking price is double what someone might actually pay.
Okay, we are talking to Melanie Evans. She's a hospital reporter for the Wall Street Journal, and she wrote a piece this week about the cost of knee surgery and the price of knee surgery. We're going to be back in a moment with Melanie. It's The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We hear a lot about healthcare market-based systems, but how can a market system work if the business delivering the service doesn't even know its own costs? A new piece published by the Wall Street Journal details how Gundersen Health Systems in La Crosse went about figuring out how much it costs were for knee replacement surgery, which is one of the most common in the U.S. They found that their costs were a lot less than they thought, and they found that they could cut waste even more. Should all hospitals do this? Give us a call, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. You could tweet us at WPR Mornings. We want to hear your stories about tangling with hospital costs or trying perhaps to get the hospital to talk to you about what the price of your procedure was before you had it. We're talking with Melanie Evans, who is a hospital reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Now, Melanie, we ended just a few minutes ago with talking about it, the list price that hospitals put out is often twice as much as they will settle for with the insurance companies for. But one of the things about your piece that I found really interesting, there are all these charts that show for knee replacement surgery how much different hospitals or different areas around the country are charging, and it's not all the same.
Yeah, so there's a lot of kind of interesting research about how healthcare prices and spending vary across the United States, and a lot of very smart people are asking questions about, well, why is this the case? And so, when it comes to knee surgery, there was some work done by the Healthcare Pricing Project. It's a group of researchers, and they actually got access to a big database of what privately insured individuals are paying for knee replacement, mm-hmm. and a couple of other services. And they looked at knees and a few other hospital services because it's a pretty standard procedure, right? So if you can think about all the things that might go into the price of a surgery, you know, some patients might be more complicated than others. Some procedures might be more complicated than others. But with knee replacements, it's a pretty standard procedure. And so they kind of looked at they looked at this particular procedure, and they kind of did some work to make sure that they were kind of adjusting their calculations for the fact that some patients are, you know, more complicated or have more, it might be sicker than others. And still, they found knee replacement prices were, like you said, kind of all over the map. And it raises this question, why is that the case? And one of the reasons, might be, well, some hospitals, you know, when they go to negotiate with insurance companies, they may have they may come into those negotiations with more bargaining leverage. When I talk to hospitals about what goes into those price negotiations, they say it's things like they are looking at, you know, where their prices fall in the marketplace, you know, how they compare, sort of possibly they want to sort of maybe be, you know, they don't want to be too high, they don't want to be too low. Mm-hmm. They may also look at their kind of overall margins. There are
I would assume there are some places that are just more expensive to live in and
yes,
have a business in than others.
Yes, that's an excellent point. I should have made that point as well. They so in some of the work that I did, so many data points.
I know.
But in some of the reporting that I did, just kind of looked at work where they were adjusting for regional variation in the cost of labor. Right. And so it's very interesting that these prices are so variable, and it raises this, it leaves open this question, like, could some of them be lower?
Yeah. Well, here's my question is that if a knee replacement surgery is a knee replacement surgery is a knee replacement surgery, and it doesn't matter if it happens here in Madison, Wisconsin, or Las Vegas, Nevada, or Austin, Texas, then why not just have a standard price for a knee replacement surgery?
Well, so, and I should make one other point, which is that, you know, the quality also varies, right? So, one of the things that this research that I just cited did is they tried to control for the quality of the hospital, right? So I should also make that point that that when, you know, these researchers were looking at how prices varied, they did try to control for this fact that, like, you know, some hospitals just might be, they might just get better results than others. And so that may also kind of factor into the price. I don't want to exclude that point.
Can we, though, standardize hospital quality? I mean, one of the things that you talked about in your piece was when Gunderson looked at what it was doing, they found things that they were doing that sort of messed up the process and maybe hindered patient recovery or at least made it elongated patient recovery, and then they fixed those things. They sort of cleaned the pipeline. Can all hospitals kind of do this and share that with each other and standardize this process?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So the work that Gunderson did was actually part of kind of a group of a couple dozen hospitals that were doing exactly that. So not only they were working with an organization called the Institute for Healthcare Improvement out of Boston. It's a nonprofit. And they were all these hospitals volunteered to, like, drill down on their costs and then share, like, what worked and what didn't, so that they could all standardize. And a lot of hospitals are doing that work. So that is an excellent point that one of the areas that hospitals are looking at is, you know, they ask the question, what is it that we know about the best way to do a procedure? And then they kind of go back and look at how they do it and ask, you know, is there anything we could do differently?
We are talking to Melanie Evans, who is a hospital reporter for the Wall Street Journal. She wrote about a hospital in La Crosse, Wisconsin, who looked at the minute-by-minute, person-by-person costs of a knee replacement surgery and found out that it was actually a lot less than they thought it was. They also found places where they could lower the cost. We are taking your calls, 800-642-1234. Andrea from Dubuque, Iowa. Welcome to the program, Andrea.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I'll make this real quick and take my answer off the air. So I had a cut on my index finger. I live in Dubuque. I was in Madison, Wisconsin. I needed to go to Mercy Hospital. I had to go to the ER because of the hour of the day. I had two stitches placed on my knuckle. I asked the nurse if I could remove the stitches myself. He said, certainly, you can. I went home. I got a bill. The original bill was $1,300,
a little bit
over that. My insurance through Cisco worked with them, to get the bill down to $700. So now I'm expected to pay a $700 bill for two stitches on my index finger that I was advised I could take out myself, and I did take out myself because I didn't want to go back. And so basically I'm looking for advice from me because I was advised that they had a coding system of 1 to 5 at the hospital and told me that I was a certain number but couldn't really explain in detail how they actually coded my visit. And thank you. I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Andrea. I'm really sorry for that. $700 for a couple of stitches in her knuckle seems excessive to me. Melanie?
Well, Andrea, thanks for the call. So you learned a lot. I mean, you were really, it sounds like you really put a lot of time into understanding the bill, negotiating with your insurance company, calling and getting information about billing codes. That is a lot of work. And, you know, this is sort of like maybe a classic example of the ways that, like, individual patients struggle to understand the high cost of U.S. healthcare. And Andrea, I wish that I had a better answer for you.
I gotta tell you, I don't know that she was, like, you know, motivated to do the work because she was interested. I would have done the work after I picked myself up off the floor after seeing that $1,300 bill.
Well, yeah, but I mean I think the point is that it's a lot of work to, you know,
right,
to kind of go through those steps, right? Call the insurance company, try to negotiate for something lower, call the hospital company, get to somebody within the hospital who can sort of explain something to you, and then you get an explanation that you don't understand that has to do with billing codes, which are wildly complex.
Yes.
Right? And you're still left with $700 bill, right? And so it sort of speaks to this extremely complex system we have that can be a frustrating and confusing and ultimately expensive.
We are talking to Melanie Evans. She wrote a piece yesterday in the Wall Street Journal detailing how a hospital in La Crosse, Wisconsin, took a deep dive look at how much it cost them to do knee replacement surgery, and they were surprised by the results. Could this have a wide-ranging impacts on other hospitals, on the healthcare system as a whole? We are taking your calls, 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. We have some calls coming in, and we're going to be taking them in a moment. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network.
Checking the WPR weather forecast for today, mostly sunny and breezy. We'll have highs in the 70s. Thursday, sunny during the day, but then becoming cloudy late in the day. Highs from the mid-70s to the low 80s. Friday, cloudy skies, showers, and a few thunderstorms across the region, with highs in the low to mid-70s. On Saturday, it'll be cloudy with some rain showers possible in the morning, then a little bit of sun coming through in the afternoon. Highs from the low 70s to the low 80s.
Coming up at 7, the National Land and Water Conservation Fund expires in September. It's been around since 1964, and it's helped Wisconsin build much of its outdoor recreation. That's after 7 on The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. A hospital administrator in La Crosse wanted to know what the hospital's cost was for a common procedure, knee replacement surgery. So she set about tracking every part of the procedure, from the prep to the discharge instructions. And what they found surprised them. The list price was roughly $50,000 for the procedure that only cost them about $10,000. And they found they were doing some steps that not only cost them more, but hindered patient recovery. We're taking your calls about your hospital issues and what you've been charged before. Have you ever tried to find out before a procedure what it costs and what did the hospital tell you? 800-642-1234. Ideas@WPR.org is the email, or you could tweet us at WPR Mornings. Melanie Evans, we do have some calls here, and I'm going to take one. Mark from Oconomowoc, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Just wanted to preface my comment with a real quick story. Recently, I had to take my son into the ER, and of course, for all things, it was because a piece of steak was stuck in his esophagus. Ooh. We were there for about 3 hours, and I just wanted to say what the retail bill came out to when I asked the hospital to send me the detailed bill was $11,800.
Wow.
The insurance discount came down to, and this is what I paid, was $3,800, which still seems pricey.
Right.
I would like to see a legislative move that would state that all providers of health care that provide billable codes would need to publish a retail price, which means if you start seeing $11,000 for a three-hour simple ER visit, that those prices might percolate down if they actually had to publish them.
So legislation might help. Thank you on that, Mark. Melanie, would legislation help?
Well, so... So this is pretty interesting. There, I want to make sure I'm speaking correctly, but so there is an effort to have hospitals post list prices publicly,
mm-hmm.
And if I remember correctly. That would be that it may actually fall under some recent regulation for hospitals coming out of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. So this is actually kind of a question that a lot of people ask, which is if those list prices are posted, how useful would they be? And to the caller's point, you know, having these prices posted just may be kind of a useful maybe indicator. It sounds like in his case, what he was thinking was that if he could see that, he would just kind of have a frame of reference for which he could sort of understand kind of the expected price.
Right. But here's my question, though. His son had a piece of steak stuck in his esophagus and was in pain, and they had to go to the emergency room. I am not going to sit down and go through comparisons of the various hospitals in the area when I've got a kid who needs to go to the emergency room. I'm going to go to the emergency room, and I'm not going to expect an $11,000 bill for 3 hours. Melanie?
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
Wait, I'm so sorry. Could I ask you to repeat that?
Yeah. So I'm like, if I'm having an emergency, I'm not going to be checking prices.
That is a fair point. That is absolutely a fair point. Yes. That's a fair point.
Okay. So we're going to take another call. Wayne from Rockland. Welcome to the program, Wayne. Wayne, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, good.
My question is, why do hospitals have to be so elaborate to build them? Like, they built one in La Crosse here with a big glass front. They spent millions of dollars on it. Why don't they build them cheaper, just a square box, and then save money on patient costs?
Why do the actual hospitals themselves, the buildings themselves, is that what you're asking about? Why are they
why do the buildings have to be so, with marble floors and all this?
Oh, okay. I had a little trouble hearing. I think, so what you're saying,
you know, why spend so much money on the buildings?
Right, marble floors and yes, and, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Well, one answer might be that that they're hoping to attract more patients, right?
Right. But
I think the caller's point is that that comes with a cost.
I find it interesting that that hospitals don't necessarily know the cost, and insurance companies do. Insurance companies pay different things because they negotiate differently with hospitals.
Yes. So when it comes to negotiation between hospitals and insurance companies, those are confidential negotiations. And what happens is that there are, as I sort of mentioned earlier, that there are different strategies that they use to negotiate. One of them being the asking price, negotiating down from that initial list price. And the degree to which the size of that discount might depend on how much business the insurance company has. So if they have a lot of people, maybe they get a bigger discount.
I want to switch though right now to talking from insurance companies to doctors themselves. One of the things you detail in your piece is I'm going to just read this, actually. The hospital slashed its cement cost by 57% by switching to a generic, which research shows can be used in most cases with the same results. Staff can hand mix antibiotics into the generic cement when needed. This is cement that puts the actual knee apparatus onto the knee. I feel like if I'm reading this from a doctor's point of view, that a doctor may not be too pleased by this efficiency measure because you're putting in extra steps, and extra steps could possibly mean more possibilities for mistakes. And also, a doctor may want to use that particular cement for a reason because they have had bad experiences with the generic cement. What are you hearing from doctors?
Yeah, so the physicians that I spoke to, and one of them quoted in the article, basically said he was kind of perplexed that they would not use the generic. So he had used the generic successfully previously. He didn't actually know that they weren't using the generic.
Right. He just said, "Give me the cement."
Yeah. And in this case, what they did is they looked at basically the literature. They looked at all the research studies around the use of this cement and basically found, okay, it is acceptable, it is okay to use this type of cement, and there isn't really a need. There's no better result you get from using the fancier. The fancier bone cement with the antibiotics premixed in. So it just was adding cost.
We've got one more call, and I need you to tell you, James, to make it quick. We've got like a half a second.
Okay.
Welcome to the program, though.
All right. Twice I've got the clinics that have been telling me that if I pay them directly, it would be cheaper than my copay with the insurance. And I'm wondering, how much does the insurance bureaucracy contribute to the high cost of medical work?
Great question. Thank you,
James,
sir.
That's so interesting. So administrative costs is absolutely, there's like, people are looking very, very closely at that to try to understand, like, what is the role of that administrative cost. I will say this very quickly. Some employers are trying to negotiate directly with hospitals and clinics, like basically sort of, And some hospitals have sort of considered how to do this, where they just essentially are trying to go straight from, essentially the people getting the care to the people providing the care.
We have been talking to Melanie Evans. She is a hospital reporter for The Wall Street Journal. One of her latest pieces is, what does knee surgery cost? Few know, and that's a problem. This is a really fascinating piece, and we're going to have a link on our website. I'm going to also put it on Twitter. Thank you, Melanie, for being with us today.
Carrie, thanks so much.
I'm Carrie Kaufman. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to The Ideas Network.